A religious war over underpants. Who do you call? Actually, Captain Underpants can't help us here. In Saudi Arabia, the simple matter of who sells women's underwear is a serious question of religious practice in one of the most conservative countries on earth. Men and women, can't we all just get along? Fashion statements and religious purity on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry. Our friend Jerome Vaughn from WDET in Detroit is in here once again for Adora Udoji. Good morning, Jerome. I hope you're getting to do something fun in New York this week.
Oh, plenty of fun things. Having a great time, John. Coming up this hour, we'll discuss what to expect in the Obama budget. We'll also take a look at restrictions on the sale of lingerie in Saudi Arabia and the security crisis in Bangladesh. Those stories and more coming up, but first, let's take a look at the top headlines.
It's theirs, signed, sealed, and delivered. Well, delivered at least. Just a day after hosting Stevie Wonder at the White House, President Obama is sending his proposed 2010 budget to Congress today. Right now, its price tag is over $3 trillion. There's sure to be plenty of debate before any signing goes on. Meanwhile, the president is calling for stronger regulations for the financial sector. He says we need them in place to prevent future meltdowns.
We now know from painful experience that we can no longer sustain 21st century markets with 20th century regulations.
Obama says investors wrongly presumed the market would correct itself, but he also blamed government regulators for not adequately protecting consumers.
Meanwhile, the House will vote today on a measure that would help out some of those debt-strapped consumers. The bill would allow homeowners facing foreclosure to go to bankruptcy court in order to reduce their monthly mortgage payments. President Obama called for the legislation last week. Yesterday, the House passed a $410 billion spending bill that will allow federal agencies to continue operating until the end of the fiscal year. The voting went largely along party lines. Some Republicans, like Indiana Congressman Mike Pence, says the measure is fiscally irresponsible.
Let's say no to an 8% increase in federal spending, no to 9,000 earmarks, and let's say yes to fiscal discipline and reform, and let's say yes to an immediate freeze on all federal spending.
The White House didn't take a formal position on the bill. It now goes to the Senate.
So the special U.S. envoy to the Middle East, George Mitchell, is in Jerusalem to speak with Israel's prime minister-designate Benjamin Netanyahu. He wants to jumpstart peace talks between Israel and the Palestinians. Netanyahu has said the most recent round of U.S.-backed negotiations were a waste of time. Attorney General Eric Holder says federal authorities have struck a major blow against one of Mexico's most powerful drug cartels. Hundreds of people have been arrested in a series of raids. The Dow and S&P both closed down more than 1% yesterday. It looks like they're going to bounce up. It's bouncing up and down around the 1% range. The S&P opens at 765. So grammar is on the agenda this morning. Get out your red pens. We want to make some corrections. What's a grammar or punctuation mistake that you've seen or heard that needs to be corrected, worked on? We're actually going to talk to someone who's trying to correct the use of apostrophes. It's a global problem, folks. I'm serious. Go to our website later today for a conversation on how to protect apostrophes. 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Correct our penmanship.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. Well, if you're a stickler for punctuation, you can go through the budget today, which is going to be released later on this morning. The White House will release the official Barack Obama administration 2010 budget. It's $3 trillion. It's an enormous document. There will be lots of punctuation in it. We're serious about punctuation, though. Tell us your punctuation usage mistakes that need to be corrected in America or around the English-speaking world at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Apostrophes, commas, ellipses, you know, give us your thoughts on all of them. But back to the budget. It in some sense, it's pointless to talk about the budget because most of it is mandatory spending. It's either debt obligations or entitlement programs that are already sort of locked in. The amount of money that you can actually talk about in an actual federal budget is really a tiny fraction of the levers that the president and Congress can pull. They don't have control over very much, but one of the things they do have control over and of one of most concern to consumers is the issue of health care. And in many ways, this budget document is a vision for the Obama administration's plan to change health care. And joining us to talk about that, this slice of the budget that probably has all the debates wound up in it and is much more than a symbol of the entire budget battle. Joining us to discuss it is Jay Newton Small, correspondent for Time Magazine. She's in Washington. Jay, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, John.
If we were to take just health care in this budget, there are a lot of revelations concerning both the style of health care delivery that the Obama administration envisions and also how it's going to be paid for. All of that really can be found in this budget. Let's start with the kind of health care that the administration seems to envision. What have you been able to learn?
Well, this is just a roadmap, and it's sort of like a guidance for those negotiators in Congress that are going to be working on this plan for the next months to come. And what they see is, look, we're going to give you a pool of money that's going to be about $634 billion, and this is how much you're going to have to spend over the next 10 years on basically what they would call universal health care. Now, that definition is varying on what people would consider universal health care. Is it a mandate that every single American has to have health insurance? Is it provided by the government? Is it provided by private health insurers? And what we see in Obama's budget is something almost like a hybrid of these plans, and it's very in line with what he campaigned on, and that is it's not something that is provided by the government. It's provided by private health insurers, and it is something that does probably not have an individual mandate, although that's a negotiation point that the Hill will have to figure out themselves, because a lot of people on the Hill do support individual mandates, such as the Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus, and obviously the HELP Committee, or Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee Chairman, which is Ted Kennedy, right, who's the big sort of driving force in this.
Right, and Ted Kennedy's been talking about universal 100% mandatory health care for virtually all of his political career. But let's just back you up there just to be clear on each point as we step through this. Obama campaigned on the issue of making health care more widely available, but short of a mandate. This is consistent with that campaign pledge, right?
Exactly. I mean, it doesn't envision a mandate, but it envisions making insurance, health insurance, affordable and available to every American,
right,
which means that anyone who wants it can get it.
All right. So that means for a consumer, this program is going to subsidize certain programs, make them more cost effective, open the ability to actually be in the insurance pool. What specifically are consumers going to possibly see as this program gets nailed down?
Well, and this is all sort of just, again, a roadmap. I mean, you're putting the cart before the horse. You're saying, here's the money before we even know what's in the program.
Right.
And so these negotiators that have already been meeting for 3 or 4 months on Capitol Hill, they've been meeting since Halloween, haven't quite gotten to this point yet. And this is still open for negotiation. Obama is sort of saying, this is what I'd like to see, but we'll get to where we're going to be in a few months' time. And so they don't really know what kind of products we're going to see towards the end, and that'll be what happens on the Hill. This is not, I mean, it's not going to be like 1994 where they're going to, the administration's going to negotiate this huge program and then sort of try and ram it down Congress's throat. They're actually going to let Congress negotiate it, and they're going to be in the room and they're going to be talking about it and getting everyone involved, but they're not going to actually legislate it. And this is, more of Obama's wish list. This is what, if in an ideal world, this is the program he'd like to see.
But it's interesting. I see the fingerprints of Rahm Emanuel here, possibly, who knows very well what happened back in 1994 under the Clinton years. We're leading, it sounds like, with, we've got the money, let's come up with the program, as opposed to what the Clinton administration did. Here's the program, and then the Republicans slowly derailed it by saying it's going to cost too much. Let's talk about the $637 billion now. Where is that money coming from, and is it realistic?
Sure. About half of it, about $318 billion, comes from the tax cuts that are, you know, President Bush's tax cuts that are going to be expiring next year on the wealthiest Americans, those Americans that make about $250,000 a year. And then the other half, I mean, this is a $634 billion program over 10-year time, right?
Right.
So the other half of that money is going to come from basically savings within the Medicare and Medicaid and the amount of money we already spend on health care insurance. And
okay,
those savings
let's talk
have
about
already
the,
started.
Let's talk about the first one. You said the money is going to come from tax cuts. I mean, of course, it's going to come from tax increases. You say cuts that are going away, but those tax increases are going to be on whom and how much?
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
I mean, well, no, I'm making fun of you, but you're right. I mean, you're right, but it's just, you know, thinking about people just waking up.
We get wrapped
up
in our Washington speak.
But there you go.
Yeah. It's the Bush tax cuts to the wealthiest Americans that we've seen over the last 7-8 years, actually about 6.5 years, for those Americans that make more than $250,000 a year. Those are going to go away. They're going to expire next year. And so we're going to get those increased revenues back into the system. And over 10 years' time, that's about going to equal $318 billion.
Right. Now, the cost savings in Medicare and Medicaid, these are the things that get me a little bleary-eyed. How exactly are they going to accomplish it? Is it specific here, or is it just sort of a general call for, you know, reducing waste?
Well, it's two things. I mean, there are specifics that are already out there, which were already passed in the stimulus. So there's two plans that were in the stimulus package. One is a plan to modernize our health records, because right now, most when you go to the doctor, you see them sort of filling out that paperwork. It's all in filing cabinets. It's moldering across the country. And every time you want to change doctors, you have to go to your doctor, get the physical things, and then, you know, bring them to the next doctor. And it's a real expense. It's time-consuming. It's a pain. And once you modernize those, you put them into a giant database. It'll be much easier for all Americans to change doctors, to bring their medical records with them wherever they go.
That sounds
great. It'll be
easier
for doctors to reference.
That sounds great, but does it mean $100 billion ka-ching? I mean, is that going to be cash? I don't see where
exactly.
The cash
comes. It means $100 billion ka-ching. Basically, that's what they estimate is anywhere from $100 to $150 billion, as high as $150 billion over 10 years in savings. So there's a big chunk of it. A second big chunk, and this is where it gets really controversial, is this plan that they had. It was about $1.1 billion in the stimulus to identify areas where they could make cuts. And this has never been done before. It's kind of amazing in the U.S. government that we've never examined what is cost-effective in Medicare and Medicaid. So they're going to take $1.1 billion and they're going to study what is cost effective, and then they're going to cut whatever is not cost effective.
And when you say now, not cost effective, you're talking about actual services, right? So a reduction in services.
Exactly. They're going to say this costs too much and it's not worth it. We're going to cut it. So that's where things are going to get really controversial.
So those crutches you can't get, those wheelchairs, maybe that operation, these medications. Right?
Exactly. I mean, like that you know, $40,000 mechanized wheelchair that everyone's got going on right now, probably not the most cost-effective thing, might be something that you see cut. But we don't know until they've finished the study.
All right. Now, added all up, what about there's one other thing which is going to get lobbyists inflamed before we go, and that is subsidies to particular insurance companies. Let's talk about that.
Well, that's part of the Medicare Part C program, and that's a program that was developed basically by Republicans to help subsidize insurance companies to go out into rural areas and provide coverage in rural areas. Now, that hasn't really worked out very well, and in fact, it's been a large pot of money that's already been rated every year for the Docs Fix, which is an annual fix for the fees that are paid to doctors under Medicare. So there's still some money left in it, so they're going to raid the rest of that and kind of kind of almost close down Medicare Part C. And so they'll get a couple billion from that or several billion from that. So there's all these different little areas where they're pulling money in and look, right now we spend about 17% of our budget on healthcare, and there's a huge amount of money that just isn't effective. And so what they're saying is it's going to be really painful. We're going to have to make some really hard choices, but we're going to have to reallocate a lot of this money because we're just not spending it effectively.
Well, Jay Newton Small, correspondent for Time Magazine, it appears that the large debates about policy and vision are yet to come, but strategically, this budget at least sets out a notion that we have the money to pay for it if we do these first initial things outlined in the budget, leading with the money as opposed to with the policy. That's the strategic takeaway on the healthcare debate, and it comes straight out of the budget. Jay, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's an interesting takeaway. I wonder if this time around, if they lead with the money, they have more chance to get programs passed.
See, to me, I go, that's money that people are going to spend however they want.
Yeah, well, the debate begins.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.